Good morning. I'm Al Middleton, a member of Prairie, and I want to welcome you. And this morning I'd like to read the Welcome to Unitarian Universalism statement from the UUA's website. We are people of all ages, people of many backgrounds, and people of many beliefs. We create spirituality and community beyond boundaries, working for more justice and more love in our own lives and in the world. Unitarian Universalism affirms and promotes seven principles. They're in the front of your hymnal. Grounded in the humanistic teachings of the world's religions. Our spirituality is unbounded, drawing from scripture and science, nature and philosophy, personal experience and ancient traditions, and as described in our six sources, which are also in the front of the hymnal. Get to know us. Leela Barr is going to help light our chalice this morning.
When people meet, endless possibilities emerge. New cultural experiences and openness to new ways of understanding and doing things. A special attention to the other and a sense of service beyond self-development. Today, this morning, let us light the chalice for openness, willingness to grow, enriching curiosity, and active cooperation.
Faith Solven will introduce our speaker today.
Morning, everybody. I guess more than an introduction, this is kind of a testimonial. And also a deep personal honor. I've known Jan Miyasaki for almost 25 years, and for me, she's been a friend, a counselor, a mentor, and literally a lifesaver. Like so many others, I kind of hold her in awe. When I get into trouble, I try to think, now, what would Jan do? she has accomplished so many things in her life. I'll annoy her if I go into all of them, but I do have to say she's an attorney. She's on the faculty of, of the UW in Ethnic Studies. She does a morning show at Wart. And of course, she's the director of Project Respect, and I think since what, 1993? And that's where we met. Respect is a program which helps women get out of the life of prostitution. And that's where we met. And here I'd like to say that this Project Respect is not just about social work, because prostitution does not exist merely because seedy or dysfunctional or powerful men buy sex from vulnerable or exploited women. It exists because it's functional for capitalism, which is supported by a misogynist, sexist society in which we're all complicit. I can tell you from personal experience that any woman or girl in this life can be severely traumatized spiritually, emotionally, sexually, and physically, perhaps for life. However, these same women are some of the strongest, smartest, most compassionate I've ever known. And Respect is where we found each other, and it's Jan that's made it all happen. And so I'm very, very proud to introduce her.
Thank you, Faith. And I thank you for inviting me to be with you and just enjoying the service and just kind of soaking in just all of this social justice energy in the room. I really appreciate that. Thank you, and thank you, Faith, for the kind words. So, Project Respect emerges from an international anti-human trafficking movement with a very long history. And even though the topic of human trafficking, and I will get to the point where I'll make the connection between human trafficking and sex trafficking and prostitution in a little bit, but even though the topic of human trafficking has become highly visible in the last few years, thank you, the work that we do here in Madison and in Wisconsin emerges from a international anti-human trafficking movement that dates back to 1949. We come into existence by the 1980s, but I always want to make this linkage back to the international movement. In 1949, when the United Nations, at the behest of women worldwide, first addressed the issue of human trafficking, especially sex trafficking, when it made a formal statement that declared that the trafficking of persons for prostitution was incompatible with the dignity and worth of the human person. And so they early on recognized this, that it is a violation of human rights. It's, you know, it takes decades, though. Even by 1980, the 80s, the decade of the women, for United Nations decade for the women, the UN prioritizes and pushes for the advancement of women's human rights throughout the world, but there still is considerable confusion and contradiction remaining in the area of sexual exploitation. So you have this early statement in 1949, but even by 1980, when they're looking at the advancement of women's rights throughout the world, they hesitate to make a statement further because of a lot of confusion and contradiction remaining in the area of sexual exploitation. It is by 1991 that the United Nations does go further. And I think they make a rather radical statement, because it is then, in 1991, that they say that it is a fundamental human right to be free from sexual exploitation in all of its forms, including rape, domestic violence, and prostitution. And the United Nations said that prostitution preys on women and children made vulnerable by poverty, underdevelopment, and displacement, and by government decisions and policies which promote these. So they say this in 1991, I think a radical statement, and identifying government decisions and policies that displace people and make them vulnerable to prostitution by others. So to bring this story home, to bring it locally, so Dane County and the city of Madison were among the first U.S. communities to recognize the bundle of issues and problems that women in prostitution face and then trap them in prostitution. And our community, and I always give us some snaps for this, our community acknowledges this in 1981. When they created Project Respect. And I'm the director of Project Respect since 1993, so these founders in 1981, you know, took a huge, courageous step. And you might remember this activity going on in those years. So Respect was founded by those in Dane County's district attorney and the city of Madison's attorney's offices. And it was founded by those in law enforcement, but also by policymakers and community leaders, civic and faith group leaders. And they wanted to end the revolving door nature of prostitution arrests by promoting access to essential community services and directing these mostly women away from the criminal justice system. And in 1981, they created one of the country's first deferred prosecution programs for women in prostitution. Mm-hmm. So 1981, took steps in the city of Madison to decriminalize prostitution in the city limits. The project was moved into the community in 1985, and placed under the management of ARC Community Services, which continues to manage the program today. And the move into the community was designed to promote self-referrals. And that is the success we've had. We still function, receive referrals from law enforcement and from the courts to divert women away from the criminal, those in prostitution, men and women, and now youth, away from the criminal justice system. But about 3/4 of the people we serve come on their own. So we've been located at the 800 block, on the 800 block of East Washington, East Johnson, since the 1980s. We've been providing outreach, crisis intervention, counseling, support groups, intensive case management, and advocacy services that address the unique, complicated needs of these women. So I remember a woman I worked with years ago. She came from many generations of women who had been prostituted. And I think about her. I don't forget her. She told me that her mother and her grandmother and her great-grandmother all had been prostituted. And she told me that prostituted women are in the Bible. And I asked her why then was she at respect. She didn't have to be there. She was coming to get support to change her life. And she told me that prostitution was not her destiny. And her strength, her dignity, her insight, her beauty continue to motivate me, and that we somehow cast people into this role in our society. You know, there is a saying that prostitution is not a contradiction in the female sex role in our society, but an aspect of the female sex role in our society. And what decides what role a girl is going to play in society? You know, what decides that? That it isn't her alone. Her memory and the memory of so many women and men I've encountered, a very diverse group across race, class, and culture. And I have to tell you, this shared experience by men and women across race, class, and culture, being able to surpass what we think are insurpassable differences, to find support over the shared experience by having your body used by others as a consumer good, you know, really tells me about this problem in our society. And it shows me the power of the transformational vision and thinking of the leaders of the anti-human trafficking movement. So I want to make sure to say that Respect is a member of the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, the oldest international anti-human trafficking organization. It is a civil society-based response. And the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women is a non-governmental organization with consultative status with the United Nations and is on its Economic and Social Council. So for 13 years now, Respect has been assisting adults on assistance of prostitution, no matter how they got trapped into it. And since 2012, we've been working with adults and children to access the benefits and protections of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act that passed in 2000 through a grant from the United States Department of Justice that we received beginning in 2012. To address the issues of domestic prostitution of adults and children in our community. First, I look across the room and I think some of you may remember this, but if you don't, it still attests to the transformational vision of some of our leaders. But you might remember Freedom House, which was the school that preceded Operation Fresh Start over on Atwood Avenue. And back in 1971, 72, I looked for it in the State Journal in the archives. Somebody who had attended there, a good friend of mine, said, oh, I remember this issue. It's always been around in our community. And we put on a play called The Throwaway Kids, you know? And so, and the Throwaway Kids were the adults I was meeting by the 80s and the 90s, right? So, So this issue of the trafficking of domestic adults and children has been present, although we often think of this as something that happens, you know, in a distant place far away. So many view these new anti-human trafficking laws as a transformational development in how society views those used in systems of prostitution, much like the transformational impact of anti-sexual assault and anti-domestic abuse laws that preceded it. But how, let me just say, how are sex trafficking and prostitution linked? First, I must say that sex trafficking relies, it must have a system of prostitution to exist. So by system of prostitution, I'm referring, and I think Faith, you were referring to that, to a sales system of human bodies, right? Adults or children's bodies for sex, for anything of value, and the prostituted person is the supply, right? They are the sex object for sale. And let me add that it isn't about sex, it is about abuse of power, just like when we look at sexual assault and domestic violence. Anti-human trafficking laws protect children who are used in systems of prostitution. And you know, they protect adults if they identify additional elements that are in the law, elements of force, fraud, or coercion. So all children, whether consent is not an issue or not, who are used in systems of prostitution are protected. And all adults who are used in systems of prostitution are protected if we can identify these additional elements. And that's another talk. I remember a young woman, a very young mother who had been repeatedly beaten by her partner, her boyfriend. There were hospital records to document this, broken bones, bruises. She would report that these injuries were from falls. And I'm pretty sure the folks at the hospital were very concerned, but she never told them how these injuries occurred. She was afraid to ask for help, afraid of what disclosure of being pimped would mean for her. She was a mother, she had kids. And her boyfriend, pimp, was offering her limited choices. You either do robberies, or you turn dates or prostitute. It didn't matter to him. She just had to bring in money somehow. And that's what he said. You know, I don't care how you do it, you just have to bring in money. And so she was beaten and she was arrested for crimes other than prostitution before her victimization was recognized. And so you can have people who are victimized in systems of prostitution who are in our criminal justice system for other crimes like robbery and theft and so forth. Burglary. And she had been arrested for these beaten and turning dates, all the while because she had to generate money somehow. But her victimization was recognized, and today she is with her children, she is living safely in another community, and she's benefiting from the protections of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which she asserted, this is what's going on with me, this is why I have been doing these acts. And she was able to defend herself, and the law had her back, right? I remember another young 15-year-old girl trafficked from the age of 13, and these are people who live in our community. These are folks, the people we see are somebody's mother, daughter, sister, aunt, friend, and then grandchildren. And I remember another 15-year-old girl. She was trafficked from the age of 13 between Madison and Chicago. And you know, her traffickers were part of her own community. And because of that, it made it difficult to recover her. And it also made it difficult to see this 15-year-old as a victim. And so she was in the juvenile delinquency system. However, our community, and I'll describe what we've been doing in a second, and we're working together to identify and recover victims from within our juvenile justice system. And we were able to ultimately recover her. Now, victims I have met emerge from all levels of society across race, socioeconomic class, and culture. They come from rural and urban communities. Perhaps because the most common precursor is something that occurs at all levels and places in society, child sexual abuse and neglect. And it's important to add that child sexual abuse alone, though, is not the cause. It doesn't somehow spoil a child. Rather, it is how we respond to it. It's if we respond to it by diminishing a child's self-worth, then we're making the child more vulnerable to the tactics of traffickers. So it isn't the child's sexual abuse that somehow spoils a child, but it is how we respond to that problem in our society. Do we believe her? Do we diminish her status or self-worth? Do we help make her vulnerable to trafficking? And I also have to say that, you know, leaving children alone, and this one's a little disturbing. I mean, we want kids to be running around and to enjoy the kind of this happiness maybe we were allowed to have in years gone by. But kids alone, especially, you know, being accessible to the scouting and grooming of traffickers, who will step in and listen and say the things that a child wants to hear. So we need to think about how we talk to our kids about this. I actually was writing notes about the kids and how difficult it can be to try and create the materials to discuss this issue with children. But we have to. So prostitution by any name is not new. So historians have located the origins of prostitution of people. Actually, the great historian Gerda Lerner from the UW did some work into the origins of prostitution. And she and others who were trying to locate its origins dated all the way back to Mesopotamia, to the origins of civilization, when slave women were used in brothels by men. So, you know, not the oldest profession, but going dating back to the origins of civilization when slave women were used in brothels by men. So it's based on long-standing harmful attitudes and beliefs, but so long-standing that subordination of women and children have created practices that appear natural, right? But they're not natural. They're based upon attitudes about the worth of some people over others. And when and if we recognize that these attitudes and behaviors are harmful and not natural, then we can bring it to an end. So let's start with, it's a fundamental human right to be free from sexual exploitation in all of its forms. And that recovery for victims can be very difficult because of the accumulated effect of childhood sexual abuse, perhaps, or neglect, juvenile domestic violence, sexual assault, and domestic violence as an adult, and the after effects of the trauma and abuse suffered at the hands by those who sell them, or benefit from the sale of them, or by those who buy them. Abuse breaks the victim down in such a way that she might not fight back. She may even defend her victimizer, because many traffickers will seduce their victims. They'll tell them that they love them. Now, I heard a trafficker, a pimp, say, first I take her heart, and then I take her body. So some pimps or traffickers will take their victims hostage, and through physical and emotional abuse, the victim develops an emotional bond with her captor. So healing and recovery is difficult. People need our support and compassion and our judgments. So I want to focus on the needs of children and what we can do. So respect is part of the coordinated community response to the commercial sexual exploitation of children. And our members include a lot of agencies that I really value in our community. Briar Patch, I think, is an essential partner. We work with the school district, work with Dane County Human Services and the Neighborhood Intervention Program. We work with healthcare providers. Access Community Health has been really helpful in seeing our victims, adults, and children really quickly and not having to wait. The Dane County Juvenile Court Administrator, municipal, state, and federal law enforcement, civic and faith groups, a group called Slave Free Madison you might be familiar with, also sexual assault and domestic abuse service providers, the Rape Crisis Center, Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. And we've been working together to improve identification of victims and to direct them into appropriate services, or to build it. Build something that they will use and hopefully spare them from additional years of trauma and abuse that occurs when their victimization goes unrecognized. So the CCR, Coordinated Community Response Group to the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children, sponsored in early 2012 the first broad community conference in Dane County to address victim identification, sex trafficking victims in particular, assistance, investigation, and prosecution. And some of you might have attended that. Also, we completed the commercial sexual exploitation of children in Dane County needs assessment, and it was the first study of its kind in the state of Wisconsin. And the study was conducted in response to increasing reports of Dane County girls being exploited for sex by adult males. And the kids we serve, said one of our respondents, the vast majority of them come from lives of chaos and suffering that most people in Madison cannot even imagine. And this was a Madison Metropolitan School District teacher who participated in the study. And I love our school district teachers. They are first responders. They are caregivers to families and children in our community. The study found the need for increased coordination between county social workers, law enforcement, youth providers, juvenile justice, and victim advocates to protect juvenile victims. It also documented the need for a residential safe house or shelter. And the study found that teaming with schools to identify victims and to prevent victimization should be a priority. And the school district here has taken a great lead in creating an anti-human trafficking response model. But one of the respondents to our interviews who was part of the school district said that it is frightening, quote, to bring this issue out into the open. It will explode. It is important to make sure our community is ready for it. And that's somebody who is in the Madison School District. And what else do we, and what do we need to respond to the needs of these young victims? We need safe harbor laws that provide legal protection for victims and diversion into specialized services. So in Wisconsin, a child under the age of 18 can still be charged with prostitution. Mm-hmm. So law enforcement, looks for elements of force, fraud, or coercion in order for a child to receive anti-human trafficking protections using the adult standard and really bypassing the protections that exist for children. So that's really one of the big issues that our coalition. There's another coalition called the Wisconsin Anti-Human Trafficking Consortium that's trying to develop safe harbor laws and the requisite services then that would be needed to address the needs of these victims outside of the criminal justice system. So we need to be able to provide a spectrum of services that fit what a child needs and will use, including community-based services all the way to long-term residential treatment and care. And we need to support the emergency youth shelter in our community at Briar Patch. So please support the shelter. It fills a significant gap in services for youth. Thank you. Some of you might have been part of Make Room for Youth, a coalition responding to the needs of homeless youth in our community, and to Briar Patch for making this happen. And we work together with homeless services and homeless and runaway youth services through a program called Operation Giving Hope to do prevention, anti-human trafficking prevention work and response. Support adequate funding for the Dane County Child Protection Services. They have a new guidance where they must now investigate non-caregiver cases. Non-caregiver cases meaning that up until now, they did not have to investigate cases that did not involve abuses by a caregiver. This potentially could cause their caseloads to multiply substantially, and we need to help meet our community's needs to investigate these and provide protective custody for these children, all the while making identification of victimization not a negative experience, because that's what they're told. They're told once they find out, you'll lose all control. They're told by traffickers and pimps that they'll take better care of them than we will. I mean, we have to really object to that. As a society, we will take better care of our kids than pimps and traffickers will. So we need leadership to mobilize systems to work together, prioritizing across systems teaming. Everybody's got their boundaries. Everybody may be reluctant to share information. We have to find ways to do this, ways that protect people's confidentiality, but needing to work together to protect our kids, the school district, juvenile justice, Dane County Human Services, and law enforcement and victim services to respond to this problem. And we need to address the coercive effects of poverty on people's lives. So I had been posed a question, do I think that our community is doing enough to address human trafficking? And I said back to the reporter, I think the question is, are we doing enough to respond to the causes of sex trafficking in our society. And if we need to address the coercive effects of poverty, because children's vulnerability is increased by inadequate mental health services, lack of secure housing, and economic insecurity, taking us back to the original statement in 1949 by the United Nations. And you can support the End Demand campaign, and to educate ourselves and community to reduce the demand. We're talking about children, but people will talk about this in the larger context of sex trafficking altogether, to reduce the demand for children for sex, because without the demand, there would be no child sex trafficking. And that gets back to that economic analysis that Faith made in her comments. So, you know, to be able to think about this issue, that that other people are not products for consumption, that they have inherent value, that there is no price to pay in a market, and that people facing limited options, it should concern us that they become vulnerable to traffickers and those who want to buy them. So again, the statement, without demand, there would be no, without demand, then there would be no need for a supply, is, I think, a good way to summarize this from a economic-based analysis. So I just want to end there. I think thank you for inviting me. I could talk about this for hours, and I'm trying really hard because it's Sunday, and while I did have a lot of coffee, not as much as I would have had by this hour on another day. And so usually when I talk about this, I get really worked up, but I'm feeling the love of the space, and it's really keeping me grounded while I'm talking about this, because I can get really, really mad. about this, but I think you really try to direct it into social change work. So at Respect, we definitely respond. Our core, duty is to respond at an individual level, and help people access services. But we do work on a systemic change level, and the prevention level, a policy level as well. So I am glad that I was invited to talk about this. The focus of our work in responding to human trafficking has been on sex trafficking, because that's the work that we've done historically. And there are a lot of organizations, I think, that focus on sex trafficking only and kind of peel that off of labor trafficking. But, while the focus of our work is on sex trafficking, we are in alignment with helping those who are trafficked in labor as well. And, think of the whole issue and what are the causes of labor and sex trafficking. And actually, let me just add that when women are labor trafficked, they're often always sex trafficked too. But not always, but often. You can't, I think, avoid educating our kids about all of a system that exists that makes anything for sale, and that depressing something so that you have such minimal worth to pay your MG&E bill, right? It's hard. People have little negotiating power, depending on how desperate they are, may have to turn a couple of days to pay their MG&E bill. So I guess my long answer to that question is that to kind of incorporate it into the other kind of lessons you have with kids about free trade or fair trade, and I mean just this larger context, because while it is about sexuality for her, and it's a time when she is at her most high risk to have high risk sexual practices, for the people who are buying it, it's about power. And so, and I had a teacher, and also a woman who's a therapist of two kids at the Rainbow Project, tell me that it's really hard, although I get what you're saying, but she put this into perspective for me, saying, on this issue, to expect kids to be able to protect themselves. So that said, what can you do? You know, it is really about availability. That the research shows that when kids are being scouted, that it is a matter of a couple of minutes before a person who's trying to identify a kid will know who to follow up on. And so if there's any kind of ways to make kids unavailable for scouting at all, or to be able to pass that scouting phase, any kind of reaction that she wants somebody to listen to her, you know, it's like fishing with bait, you know. So I think it is about availability. I think self-esteem early on, like very early on, to, you know, address the question of worth as being tied to stuff. That is actually what happens with a lot of kids now. And so, I mean, it's really complicated. There's some good school curriculum that are used for prevention about worth and value and safety, and you know, what are the practices of these guys. But if they're trying to seduce you, it's really hard to parcel out the seduction from the truth. So just, you know, good question, but it is a larger problem about the demand, because if there was no demand, they wouldn't need these kids, and we can't expect the kids to protect themselves. So sorry, it was a long answer. I told you I could go on. So that question, I think, is one that a community can have. I mean, I would, you know, if we want, you know, we should have a discussion about racism and slavery and, you know, sexism. I mean, let's have that discussion. Let's, like, really chomp into it and discuss it. And if after a really, really good, fair discussion about oppression and what our community values, and after all that, I mean, honestly, we decide that this is okay, then that's where we're at. But I don't think that that's what we've ever had about even race, you know? So I guess I would have to say that, short of that, what we have is a, you know, a discussion that, for us at Respect, doesn't really determine whether or not we're going to provide services to somebody. We'll serve a person however she got involved in prostitution and however she views how she got involved, right? And like many of us, we don't like to recognize how difficult it might have been to be victimized, right? And so a lot of folks don't really have that identification until later down the line. So I guess I would say to that question, from Respect standpoint, and that's why I said the forced fraud or coercion exception in the adult law really is showing a kind of lack of consensus in our community about whether or not we would support this behavior, and that we need to have a good debate about it. But it doesn't matter to us. We will provide services no matter how a person got involved. I think that's a larger discussion. There's a saying that, you know, respect alone cannot end this problem. It takes the whole community to have that. It's like, you know, a group alone can't end racism. It takes the whole community. There are movements, I think you might have known about the Stockholm. Is it Stockholm? It's in Sweden. Yes, it's in Sweden, where they have legalized, they didn't legalize it, but they criminalized it for the demanders, right? That seems to be the way things might develop, is not criminalizing it for women, which is different from legalizing, but criminalizing it for the demanders, right? So, this is like really, these are like really tough questions. a good majority of the adults that we see and the youth we see have some kind of addiction. It's more chronic in the adults. The kids we say may not be dependent yet, but they're using drugs. It's used as a way to entrap people into prostitution. And why I'm saying that's important is because when you're dealing with the folks that I see, often, you know, they might say, you know, I only do this when I'm using, but others might say, I don't want people to just see me as a drug addict. There are other things that happened and how I got caught up in this. And there's an exception in the Wisconsin law, it's not in the federal law, that anybody who uses controlled substances to control somebody and entrap them in prostitution is violating the anti-human trafficking law. So it recognizes that it uses drugs to control people. You know, it makes it worse, it makes it harder to get out of. So, yeah, I mean, drug addiction is, you know, the hand, you know, the driver, you know, is the for it often. So we're in terms of services that we need, you know, it's been if I were to ask for what we could have in a community, it'd be great to have more drug treatment programs, particularly longer stay. Substance abuse programs that are not criminal justice based.
Jan, thank you very much.
Ryan Camp will read our closing words.
Sorrow will one day return to joy. All that breaks the heart and oppresses the soul will one day give place to peace and understanding, and everyone will be free.
Please greet your neighbor and join us for coffee and conversation.